So, there is a connection. There is a connection between all these things that we have experienced somehow. A connection between Elise. A connection between the Minotaur, everything that they uncovered, as well as the Doctor and what he did at Malaren. I can't see why, but on the other hand, why not? It's so clear now. I must take what I have learned from this book. If I can continue these studies, then we can put an end to what's happening here in Oslo. I have no doubt that the information I have uncovered will prove crucial in our endeavors. I must consult with the Deep Ones. As for Rangel, maybe I'm too old, but I cannot bear to continue my resentment against him. This Minotaur has driven him out of his mind. It's unfortunate that he still is obsessed with it and what it means. I can see it for what it is, an evil force for which Popov must be stopped. This is Red Moon Roleplaying.
I mull this over in my head for a bit as I drive and try to figure out where to go, and I'm starting to head towards this area that he mentioned, the slums. If we find this person first and can figure out where this is, then perhaps that will be enough to make some sort of call for when the ceremony takes place and get the police there, if nothing else, to intercept it all.
That might be just enough for Holmstrom to be able to get the Norwegian police to move. You bet he probably doesn't have that many favors he can call in, so you have to make it count when you do ask for his help.
I discuss this with Crane, and I say that so maybe we'd better find this person first, see if we can find out where this ritual or whatever they would call it, this ceremony, is to take place, and then go through our contact and get the police there. And I try to find a place where we can stop and, I suppose, start asking around. That's what we'll have to do. We'll have to walk around on the street and ask random people for this name.
Can you roll for luck then, and let's see if you find a person who happens to know Radar.
I roll 50.
I roll 24 under 36.
Ooh, excellent. And it was a little bit of a hard roll as well. Well then, Crane, Jung, you don't have much success, unfortunately, but Crane, you come across a man who is it's an older man. He's sitting outside one of the wooden huts here in this area, Piperviken. First of all, we can say Piperviken is this, it's an area filled with dilapidated wooden huts. All is gray and sooty here. And the kids who run around barefoot, they look hollow-eyed, and it seems like poverty and alcoholism is rife, in spite of the prohibition. The prohibition in Norway, by the way, looks to be coming to an end. There will be a referendum in October, and you're pretty sure that they will vote to get the booze back. But here, it's been back all along. So, you ask this older man who is sitting outside this wooden hut, and he's smoking a pipe. Radar? Points to a house that looks to be in slightly better condition than the neighboring houses. Someone's actually tried to paint the facade blue. You see some rough men standing outside of this little house.
Ah, that house over there, you sure? I see, alright then. Well, I'll look to Mr. Jung and start walking to this building. Smiling, trying to be disarming, although I do have my gun at the ready in my pocket.
I have been standing on the other side of the street asking some other people who had no idea what I was talking about or who. I look up and I see your gaze, and I excuse myself from them and thank them, and then I start following you at a brusque pace.
Where do you have Rangel as this is happening? Is he with you?
I think so. I think we're keeping him close at hand just in case. Although I've stopped pointing a gun at him.
He seems to be quite cooperative and also regret his crimes. We have no ways of detaining him, really. He will probably just want to get that bloody Minotaur back, I think to myself. But if that coincides with our current course, then we better just keep him close.
Yes, and you do get the feeling that Rutger Rangel is an academic who has gotten in way above his head and is really not used to being in this kind of situation. He seems to want to get back to civilization and to the life that he was used to.
And with that, I follow after George towards this cottage and with the armed men, or the yes. burly men.
The burly men are standing around outside the house. They're smoking and talking. One of them spits close to you as you approach. He kind of nods to you.
I smile and tip my hat in a polite fashion. Gentlemen, good day. Sorry to bother you. We're here looking for a Mr. Radar. Let's suppose you've seen them?
Who's asking?
Hopefully a friend.
You don't look Russian. That's good. But you are foreign. That's bad.
Unfortunate. Yes, I am from London, but my associate here, he's Swedish. Does that help?
No.
Well, I know our countries are not on the best of terms, I say apologetically, as George is making this, trying to make this look better than it is. And I say, but we are common enemies of the Russians and their plans.
And they look a little bit suspiciously at you, and they say, oh, we'll let Kari decide. Come inside.
Can't ask for fairer than that, and I again try and be pleasant as I walk in.
You are invited into the kitchen of this wooden hut, and there's a woman who looks to be in her 80s, sitting in a rocking chair. She's eyeing you suspiciously. She's got long gray hair and a stern look on her face. And you can see that she must be clearly blind. Yes, the milky white eyes there, yeah. She hears one of the men whisper in her ear. And then she asks, what do you want with Radar?
We wish to try and help him. We believe he has enemies. That's why he's hiding here. They are our enemies as well. We believe he knows where they are. We intend to, well, deal with them.
And she stands up surprisingly quickly for a woman her age. She gets up right in your face, very much invading your personal space. And she is eyeing you with her whitish eyes. You feel like you're being judged. And she asks, will you harm Popov?
Well, unsure at this point. It's unlikely that he will get away with what he's doing. I don't know if he'll be harmed by myself or not.
That's a complicated answer to a simple question.
I stand a bit away, watching them, and I unwillingly take a step backwards, and I bump into one of the men, and I look very nervous and out of place. But I try to add, yes, we are... We want to harm him. We want to harm his plans, what he's doing.
A straightforward one. She hears your voice and is looking towards you, even though she definitely cannot see you. Good. Leif and Ivar will take you there when it gets dark. They're Radar's cousins. And the rough men from before, they nod to you, two of them.
I nod to them as well. Leif... Ivar, I am Fingal Jung.
A Swede. Great.
Yes.
And it is not too many hours until it becomes night. Is there anything you want to do until night falls, or are you hanging out here in the wooden hut with Kari and her family?
I can't really think of anything I could be doing, really. As long as Wrangle is secure, I'm just toying with the gun and feeling anxious about all this. Something very big is going to happen, but again, I just need the Minotaur. I don't have any interest in this other artifact, to be honest. I haven't even seen it, but I know the Minotaur is important.
When is the meeting? Is it tomorrow, the ceremony?
Wrangle speaks to you. Yes, tomorrow. The full moon. It's not quite full moon yet, but tomorrow it will be. That's when they will do it. We just don't know where.
I'm fidgeting with my things. I'm scratching the bites. Yes. Try to do anything to calm my nerves at this point, I suppose. If I have the time and possibility, I might even go to a bank and try and get some more money out just to have.
Well, it seems like they want you to stay, so you end up trying to kill the time, and it does finally become dark. And there's an almost full moon that lights up the sky. Leif and Ivar, they lead you to a small sailboat that has been fitted with a steam engine. We'll take you to him now. Get in.
Oh, he's out on the sea, on an island?
I kind of pause for a moment and I look to Mr. Young, mentioning quietly. Earlier, Mr. Young, you were talking about that book you finally got translated. Why do you keep going on about all that nonsense? You don't really think deep ones. What exactly is a deep one?
Well, what do you think? What we have seen so far, you've seen the strange sort of salamander-like creature that was kept in the villa. You've seen the photo of the strange sea creature, the ones that the fishermen were gathered around. I don't know. Maybe, perhaps some people have returned to some simple. What do you call it when you pray to someone? You're like
simple old faiths. But yes, Mr. Young, come. That was all Dr. Wilde's experimentations. Some sort of mutation. What's that got to do with beings from the sea? Are you saying beings come from the sea and they're fighting with this king? No,
you know how obsessed Elise was and just having come from there. There was something down there. Perhaps these beings and people have decided that this is strange enough to worship. And now these people, the military, I mean Popov and Brat, they have decided that I don't know, George. It doesn't make any sense, but...
No, it doesn't. All right, well, let's get on the boat then. And I kind of just cut the conversation.
And I sit there and I think to myself how it was described that this Graf Gauberg was communing with these deep ones through his hashish session and reciting that rhyme, and I go over that rhyme in my head. Rhyme that I've read so many times and now know by heart.
Indeed. And you start to wonder, Jung, perhaps you could commune with them as well. You probably need more practice, but perhaps you will be able to talk to them, to call on them, to contact them. Imagine the things you could learn then.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't know if it's all real, but if it is, then yes, I could learn so much. Someone has taken a great deal of time to write this book and these experiments, and it really connects with what has been happening.
Yes. Count Gawaberg, he did learn a lot that you have read in his book. Well, Leif and Ivar speak to you. We're going to go to Dynafyr, the lighthouse. That's where he is, they say, after you've gotten out to sea.
I see. Yes, please take us there. Say, the two of you wouldn't know where to acquire hashish in this city?
They look to each other and smile. Yeah, I think we can help you.
Well, we'll talk about that later then.
The steam engine makes a lot of noise in the otherwise quiet Norwegian night as you approach the lighthouse. It almost looks like a little chapel built on a tiny island. There's a small bell tower that rises from one end of the building, and a strong white light coming from the top of it. Leif and Ivar tie the boat to the little quay, and they start disembarking. As they do that, a large, middle-aged man with a beard and a sailor's pipe steps out on the quay to meet you. He wears a lighthouse keeper's uniform with a visor cap. He's got very large arms and very big hands. He looks to you first and then speaks to Leif and Ivar. You know that visitors aren't welcome here, right? Leif says, well, they might be able to help you-know-who. Well, if you say so. He comes up to you to shake your hands. He's got an unusually strong handshake. I'm Sverre, the lighthouse keeper.
Nice to meet you, Sverre. I am Fingal.
Crane, George Crane, a pleasure. Forgive us for intruding upon you, sir. But we've been told that, well, we've been brought here to you, I assume, so that we can meet a mutual acquaintance.
He eyes you, trying to size you up before nodding and saying, yes, Radar is here, but he is difficult to talk to. I must warn you of that. But he points to the lighthouse and begins showing you in. The lighthouse has two floors. On the ground floor, there's a simple kitchen and a hall with a wooden sofa. There's a kerosene lamp that's hanging from the ceiling. At the kitchen table here sits an unshaven middle-aged man. He has blonde, tousled hair, a square jaw, and a wild look on his face. His arms are folded tightly over his chest, and he is shivering slightly. There's something not quite right with him. Svare moves up and stands behind what you understand is his cousin, Reidar, and holds his shoulders. And if you're going to speak to him, it might be difficult to make sense of what he has to say, but you're certainly welcome to try. He can be violent, but I can hold him so that he doesn't harm himself or anyone else.
Thank you. I take one last look at the moonlit sea outside as the door closes, and I move up to sit down on the other side of the table and look to George to do the same.
I sit, taking a moment to consider this rather unusual lighthouse. Who would have thought I'd be spending my time in a lighthouse by the sea? It's all rather mysterious, but I try and focus. Hello, Mr. Radar?
He looks to you. He nods.
Good evening. We're here to help. Do you understand that? We're on your side.
He nods again.
We need you to tell us where the cult are preparing their ceremony. It's somewhere, obviously, at sea, but where do you know?
I think I know what you're talking about. Popov, right?
Yes, that's right. We know everything. We know that Popov, Brat, even Rangel here, and yourself, you've all been trying to do something rather exciting, but it's all gone a bit too far now. It needs to be stopped, and we're going to help stop it. Don't worry, you don't need to do anything yourself. You just need to give us the information.
I can tell you about Popov. I can tell you what an evil bastard he is, how he... Do you know? in the war. He murdered civilians and prisoners as though it was some kind of contest. He's evil. And I was a mate on the ship. That's how I met him, on the Samson, on the way here.
And we understand, Mr. Radar, that you are not evil. And what we have heard
that's
now...
That's not true. I am.
No?
I am evil. On the way here, there was a storm. A storm blew up, at the same time as the engine malfunctioned. We drifted off course, out on the high seas. The situation was critical. There was ice threatened to smash through the hull. Everyone was preparing for the end. Then came the dreams. You've seen dreams, right? The king. The shining king, you've seen him. A man with a black bull's head, dressed in a shining dress uniform. You know, he rose from a tomb on the bottom of the sea and promised to save us, to lead us to victory. He promised us. Has he promised you that? He looks to the two of you.
I just look at him a bit empty-eyed, as if I'm not really sure what he is alluding to, because I have not had these dreams, but I start to nod slowly, just relating to the vision that we had with Prince Eugen at the museum.
I fidget a little, scratching at one of my bites, and I don't say anything for a moment, and then I say, it's hardly important. We're more interested in what he promised you. He promised you that there was something in a little village? Kingshaven? You know Kingshaven?
I don't know about Kingshaven, but I heard him mention it. I think that's where the king was there. The king, he made me evil, you know. He told me to throw civilians overboard to prevent the ship from sinking, to arm myself. And I did. We did. When the storm subsided, there were two groups on the ship. One, like me, and he looks to you. You've seen him too, haven't you? You know his light. You understand?
I've seen the statue, yes. Pray tell.
I squint towards George. He seems a bit evasive on this subject. I wonder what's going on, but I don't say anything.
They thought we were crazy. We probably were crazy. The colonel. He led us as we sacrificed the unfaithful and swore our oaths to the king. All who refused died. We executed more than 100 people on that ship. And a minotaur of soot and smoke was formed from the ship's chimney, and it blessed us believers. I breathed in the smoke, and it was glorious.
If it's all so goddamn glorious, why have you had a change of heart now?
Well, the point is, Mr. Raider, if you wish to repent, if you wish to make a difference, we can tell you that we know that they are preparing a similar sort of ritual. They want to sacrifice people again, and we need it to be stopped, and you can be one of the people helping us
stop this. I want to help stop him, because they decided that they were going to find the king. That's what they did as we arrived here, and they've been searching for him for so long, and now they have found him. Everything was subordinate to finding the king, and now he is found. But I began to doubt. Waking the king, I saw the visions from the court. Waking him would mean being devoured, and there would be nothing but a painful death for an insignificant being such as myself. I know that. I think Popov knows that too, and yet he still persists. He asked me to join him on this journey. They're going to Iceland, you see, with the Hercules. But...
Where in Iceland?
Sigurlafjardur. I knew it was going to be a one-way trip, so I refused. I escaped. And his gaze becomes a bit clearer now, as if he's made some kind of decision. You need to hear. about the Minotaur. We call on the Minotaur in the temple to give. We call on the Minotaur in the temple to give power to the king. We meet in the temple. Nielsen's Mekoniska by Old Acre Church, where the weak must die. In their skulls we store the power to the king so he can come back. But I'm not supposed to say that. I don't get to say that. No! And he screams. And writhes in pain, and he's screaming, and his whole body is writhing as if something is moving under his clothes and under his skin. Svad is looking panicked while he's trying to hold on to his cousin, and Leif and Ivar are also backing away. What do you do?
I step up alarmed, and I back away a little. I am filled with a sense of dread. What he speaks of, this waking of the king, and death being devoured, and I think I do not want that. I do not want that.
Young, what do you do?
Radar, please calm yourself. You've said nothing.
And Radar's mouth opens wide, wider than what should be possible as he screams, and suddenly a swarm of insects rush out of Radar's mouth, and they spread throughout the lighthouse and fill it up to the roof. Radar is convulsing as insects are coming out of his orifices. His body jerks so violently that Sverre loses his grip on him, and soon after that the upper body just explodes in a cloud of insects, hundreds of thousands of biting and stinging insects that are throwing themselves over everyone in this little lighthouse. I want you to roll a sanity roll.
63 over 38.
Roll 1d6.
65 over 53.
Roll 1d6.
I roll a 1.
3 for me.
What happens here? You are not going to be acting rationally here, but who would? This isn't a situation where one acts rationally, is it? What do you do?
I flee the scene. I hold up my hands immediately as I see this eruption of insects, and I do not look to see what happens next. I do not even see the demise of this poor man, for I've already rushed to the exit, rushed to the seafront, wherever it is by the lighthouse, and I'm just cowering there, and I'm just closing my eyes and ignoring everything that's happening. I think that's why I'm able to keep it together at least a little, but only because I know I cannot. I can't bear the insects again, I can't.
And Jung?
The rational thing, I think, would be to run out and throw myself into the sea. But this doesn't happen. Instead, I see the insects coming out, and I see him burst with them coming out of him. And I think to myself that now I understand. Now I understand where they come from. This explains it all. I just stand up and I laugh. I feel them biting my skin and yet I laugh. They're all coming. They're all coming from inside of us, the ugliness that we have inside.
Leif and Ivar have begun fleeing. Sverre has grabbed an axe and he's chopping with this axe in the air, not being able to do anything. He has mighty swings, but there's thousands of insects around him. Leif begins pulling at you, Jung, trying to get you out of there, and begins pulling you out of the lighthouse. Come on, we have to go.
I don't understand. No, he starts pulling me out, and I more or less let him do this. But at the same time, I feel them on my skin. I feel them biting me again, opening up old wounds that have barely just begun to heal. And I just indicate towards them all, indicate towards the swarm. I feel them in my face, in my nose, as he pulls me outside, and I keep laughing because I've understood something. I've understood. This is why the skulls were singing. This is why they were cleaned, because they had been too expelled of the ugliness inside of them.
You can roll 1d6 damage for yourself. 2. Then you take 2 hit points and damage. The insect swarm seems to focus in on Sverre, and you hear him screaming as Leif and Ivar are getting into the boat, and they see you there as well, cowering, Crane, and motion for you to get in. We gotta go.
I kind of, again, just sort of stand up and I look at them. I don't look back. I can't look back. And I just nod. Yes, let's get out of here. Young, where the hell are you?
And Jung is in the boat as well, having been pulled in by Leif. And the little steamboat begins moving off as quickly as it can, as you see this insect swarm devouring what was left of Reidar and poor Sverre, the lighthouse keeper. You are able to make it back to the shore, and you contact Holmström and you tell him about what you have found. And just as you planned, you give the location of, well, where Reidar told you that the temple would be. Nielsen's Mekaniska, some kind of machine shop close to Old Acre Church. And you are now there. Holmström has asked you to join him as he observes what happens there. You're not going to actually be part of the arrest or anything like that, but it'll give you nice closure to see the temple being cleared out and the responsible people being taken to justice, right?
Yes, yes it will. I've already once again tried to put everything behind me. I've definitely had a drink when we got back. I had several drinks, in fact, but now we're here, and how many men did he bring with him? How many of the Norwegian police are here?
You're overlooking Nielsen's Mekaniska, which is this half-dilapidated brick building that's surrounded by smaller wooden huts with corrugated iron roofs. And there's a wooden shed with a large iron door located directly against a low mountainside. Holmström is pointing towards a group of 10 men in civilian clothes. They're trying to look inconspicuous, but you can see that they're clearly armed. Those are the officers. They're armed and ready. And it's as if everyone is waiting for something to happen. As you're waiting, what do you do?
I am... Yes. I am itching my new bites from the insects nervously. I give off a little laugh to myself from time to time. You're gonna get it now. It's the Major, I hope he's there. I hope Popov is there, and I hope they will get what's coming to them. But I'm also a bit nervous looking at these Norwegian officers. I hope they are capable enough to handle the situation.
And I am just pacing anxiously. I have the gun in my pocket. I'm waiting for this all to be taken care of, and then when it's taken care of, I can just, you know, go in and collect what's mine, and then, I don't know, put it in a box and lock it away somewhere, because I don't want it anymore, not in that way. I saw what happened to that man. I can imagine it. The Shining King, that's what they call it. I think I have seen it in my dreams, and I think it made me bow, and does that mean I'm going to... Insects? Are they in me now? But no, it's fine. I'll just get it and put it safely in a museum, and then that'll be it, and that'll be good. All done.
Yes. A small truck with a tarpaulin over the roof stops in front of the wooden shed and honks its horn. Some people come out of the brick building and begin hauling what looks like, well, you know what it is. People towards the wooden shed door. Move them inside, maybe 6 bodies. They seem to be alive still. They close the door behind themselves and the truck moves off. And this is when you see the police officers beginning to move towards the shed door. Now they have their weapons drawn, pistols and shotguns. And they move in. Crane, the Shining King. He's calling to you. He's singing to you from down there. Roll a pow.
A free.
That's an extreme success.
I hear this song, this beautiful song, and for a moment I just start stepping forwards, and then, no, I remember the man, I remember the insects. It's almost like the singing is insects, isn't it? It's a hideous chorus of some sort of bug. No, I sort of just turn away. I turn away.
Swear your oath to me. Come, swear your oath to me.
No, you're not real. You're not real. I've never...
Shh. And you turn away as you shush him and focus on him. You notice that Rangel is moving towards the shed. And Hornster goes, oh, what? And he begins moving after him.
Stop him. What's Rangel? Stop right there.
And Rangel begins running, and Holmstern begins running after him. But they're keeping about the same pace now, and they're a bit ahead of you now. What do you do?
I rush forward, and I try and shoot Rangel. Maybe in the leg.
All right. You rush forward, and you try to shoot at Rangel. Roll your firearms handgun to shoot at Rangel.
99, which is a complete fumble. I shall spend 5 luck points just to make it a normal fail.
And you miss completely, and Holmstrom looks back behind you. He has his weapon. Oh, what the hell? And you see Rangel making it even further, and he makes it inside the iron door. And Holmstrom follows him. We have to get him.
Ah, damn it! Yes, we need to stop him. He's going to do something. He'll help them. He's going to help them.
And you see people looking out of their windows in this area and say, what the hell's going on?
There's no time for that. I pursue Rangel into the building.
And what do you do, Jung?
I see this unfold very quickly, and not having had any sort of vision or hearing anything myself, I see them running off and... No, stop. Let the police do what they're doing. I look up and I see the people looking out of the windows. I try saying something to them, but nothing really clear comes out. And I find myself moving towards the house, not because I want to try and intervene, but because I don't want to stand out here alone in the open.
Yes. And you reach the iron door in the shed here that is connected to the mountainside. You see that there's kerosene lamps burning in there, and black hoods are hanging on hooks here. Rangel and Holmstrom have disappeared somewhere inside, and it is up to you now if you wish to follow them down into this mine tunnel, because that is what it is. The walls and ceiling are made of rough stone, and the floor is smooth.
I frown a little. I look at one of these cloaks. I go and put one on. If we're going to head into darkness, maybe that will hide us better. But as I'm doing this, I imagine Mr. Jung finally
yes,
catches
Yes, I come
up.
In. Josh, what are you doing? If the police will think you're one of them.
No, don't you see? He's... Rangel, he can't resist the call. He's going to do something. I know it. He's going to do something
call,
and help them.
Call. There was no call.
The call, man, of the... I don't know. It's the same thing that Radar was talking about. Didn't you see? And plus, what of our companion? Like, surely they'll be moving in any moment. We just need to make sure that Rangel doesn't alert them.
I couldn't do anything. I just, feel very incapable of handling this situation as George is starting to rush in with this cloak on, and I just follow him and I try to convince him otherwise as we make our way down into the place.
And you see that this black cloak, there's dried blood on it. Do you wear one as well, or do you go in your normal clothes?
No, I will go in my normal clothes.
Yes.
I do actually pause for a moment and throw the cloak off, as I do think he has a point. Maybe I'll get shot. They think I'm one of them, so... No, I won't wear a cloak after all.
Oh, you put it down again, and you begin following after Rangel and Holmstrom, then. And the roof is supported with logs deployed at regular intervals here, and there's a nauseating, sour scent that hangs heavy in the cold and humid air. You can hear loud voices from further down in the mine, It continues for maybe 50 meters downwards, and the sour smell becomes stronger and stronger. And the corridor opens up into a hall, 20 meters long, 10 meters wide, and 5 meters high. There's wooden benches that line up in front of a black altar of stone and a twisted parody of a church. There's a large group of people in hoods here. They're singing, chanting. You can hear further atonal singing coming from somewhere at the back of the room. You recognize this song. It is not the living that sing. The police officers are here. They should be pointing weapons. They should be arresting people, but they are kneeling, trying to cover their ears as if overtaken by something. I want you both to roll POW.
77 over 55.
13 under 40.
Jung, you are drawn into this ritual and you find yourself falling to your knees, covering your ears. Crane, you resist. You've resisted the call of the Shining King in the past as well, and you see things clearly. You see where the singing comes from. There's 28 skulls on the altar. Some are fresh, others completely mummified by age. There's men, there's women, there's children. And that is when chaos begins ensuing. It's as if everyone, except you, panics at once. Police officers and cultists alike. And Jung is one of them. They scream, they rip at their own clothes, they fight. Some are falling down on the floor, crying or becoming catatonic. Everyone seems to have lost their minds. What do you do?
I pause for a moment at this sight. Again, I hear that hideous singing, but it's not singing, it's bugs. Bugs chattering and chirping, and I despise it. But Young, he's on the ground. I try and, like, snap him out of it. Like, Young, snap out of it, man! Don't listen!
Scream, and I panic. I feel my head is filled with unfathomable sequences of sentences I don't understand. Get them out! Get them out! Make them stop!
And, Crane, you again hear that atonal singing from the skulls, and you see the lips and the jaws moving. They are the only ones that are now singing. Everyone else is completely lost it. And you see forming in the air here the shape of the Shining King. He will soon have complete power, not only of the people here. He will not only take the will, the power, the energy of the people here, but he will also take yours, unless you somehow stop him from arriving.
You mentioned, I look around for kerosene. Kerosene lamps, are there any here?
Yes.
I move forward quickly. I don't think I can do anything for my friend, but I'll move to the lamp and I'll grab it off the holster, whatever it's on, and try and just throw it at this hideous collection of skulls.
And you do so, and you throw this kerosene lamp towards the pile of skulls, and the flames that break out, they break out wildly, and the skulls continue singing while they are on fire, but the heat is so intense that they begin to char, and some of them crack, and the singing grows weaker and weaker, and all becomes black.
And just if I have a moment before the darkness, I raise my gun and I just start firing at these hideous singing nightmares.
And it is those bangs that are the last thing that you hear before darkness takes you. You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played the Kingshaven Minotaur for Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition. This adventure was written by our friends Gunilla Jonsson and Mikael Pedersen for the Swedish edition of Call of Cthulhu that is published by the fantastic folks at Elusive Publishing. The music is from the Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, Yog-Sothoth, Shub-Niggurath, and Asatoth compilations by our friends at Cryochamber. Check them out at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more game music for your table. We've also used the official soundtrack for the Swedish version of Call of Cthulhu, composed by none other than our friend Andreas Lundström from Sweden Rolls. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoshobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, and David Hogberg for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult of Minutes Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. And remember, that is not dead which can eternal lie, and with strange eons, even death may die.